Hello and welcome back to Catching Up on Capitol Hill, a series in which we discuss the latest in tax legislation and in tax policy. I'm your host, John Gimigliano. Well, listeners, it's good to be back with you in the new year. We didn't have a lot to say last fall with the prolonged government shutdown and all, and then the unusually quiet pre-holiday session after that. There just wasn't a lot happening that was really worth your time or attention. But now, well, it's a new year, and there are new and old pressing matters upon Congress. So today we are going to ask what I think is the obvious question: what might Congress realistically do in 2026? And of course, does that include tax measures? Hopefully we can sort out the things that Congress must do, the things that they would like to do, and the things that are, well, probably not in the cards. To help me do that, today we are joined by Catching Up on Capitol Hill regulars, Jennifer Gray and Tom Stout. All right, Tom, let's start with you. We're going to come to tax soon enough. Right? This is a tax podcast after all. But before we get to tax, looking ahead to 2026, what are some of the things that Congress is required to deal with this year?
Well, the biggest thing they've got on their agenda, obviously, is funding the government. The government funding currently, CR, extends only to the end of January, January 30th, actually. So they've got to figure out how to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year. And at some point in the year, they're going to have to start worrying about the next fiscal year as well. So those are the things that they absolutely have to do. But they're also dealing currently with the Affordable Care Act discharge petition in the House, which they've got to deal with. They've got a War Powers resolution also pending, both of those probably this week. And they're talking seriously, and we'll probably come back to this when we talk about tax, talking about regulatory reform in general, but also regulation of the crypto markets, which has become an important issue. So that's something else they're probably going to have to deal with at some point this year.
Well, let's not forget the other thing that they're going to have to deal with, which is the thing that nobody can yet imagine, because it always happens that something is going to come up. Don't you agree that what they're going to have to deal with?
As our former defense secretary said, they're the unknown unknowns. Actually, there's a lot that may happen between now and then, mainly having to do with the economy, which way is it going and how they might have to react to it. And underneath that, what is the Supreme Court going to do about tariffs and how might they react to that?
Right. So let's just talk about the government shutdown for a second, though. You talked about the possibility that they're going to have to fund the government again before too long. Do you think the position of Republicans and Democrats as it relates to government funding has changed since the last extended shutdown that we went through, or are we headed towards another shutdown?
What's changed substantially in one way, and that is the Democratic leadership has indicated that it's ready to proceed with the Affordable Care Act subsidies on a separate track. They're not going to tie that up with the funding. That was what caused the shutdown back in October. But they still have other issues in connection with the funding. They've got to deal with earmarks, which a lot of Republican members don't like. There are all sorts of DEI writers that they've got to sort out and decide whether they're going to do anything with them. And then in connection with Venezuela and potentially Greenland, the question may come up about whether they're going to do something more than the War Powers Resolution, which probably be ineffective because even if it passes, Trump will veto it. So they may want to inject that into the process. They still have a lot of issues to deal with in connection with the funding by the end of the month that could potentially cause another shutdown.
Of course, we like to think a lot about tax. We have to remind ourselves from time to time that it's not all about tax, right? Congress has other things they have to deal with, and tax could be an afterthought in all of this. Okay, very helpful. That sets the big picture. Now, Jennifer, we're getting closer to tax, but we're not quite there yet. Now, let's remember, in recent years, maybe decades, big, important stuff gets done in Washington through budget reconciliation, right? OB3, Inflation Reduction Act, Build Back Better would have been done by budget reconciliation, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Affordable Care Act, we'll go on and on. Is budget reconciliation, and in what ways, available to Republicans this year?
Well, it's absolutely available. In fact, they could easily do up to two reconciliation bills this calendar year. The question is, do they have a reason to do it, i.e. do they have a policy that they want to push through that they could not get the 60 votes in the Senate, meaning they could not get Democratic support in the Senate to make it bipartisan, forcing them to do it in a partisan manner using reconciliation? Is there a policy that is compelling enough for them to use reconciliation to do that or not? And another question is, even if they have something they want to do on a partisan basis, would they be able to get enough agreement within the Republican caucus, particularly in the House, to be able to get that passed? As I'm sure folks have noticed, the numbers in the House change almost daily, it seems like, with folks resigning, being elected to other office, members passing away, and those numbers continue to remain extremely tight for Republicans. And so them being able to get consensus among their members to be able to pass another reconciliation bill would certainly be challenging, I think.
Law is made at the intersection of various components, politics, policy, and procedure. Procedurally, I think I'm hearing you say, sure, yeah, budget reconciliation is available to them, but that's just one ingredient here. We need the politics and the policy to align, and that's less clear. Is that sort of what we're saying?
I think so. As I said, it's certainly possible they could do up to two bills this year. Question is, again, policy, do they have something compelling enough to do it? And two, politics, do they have the votes to be able to get it through, even on a partisan basis?
That all makes a lot of sense to me. There is the possibility of reconciliation. It doesn't mean that they will do one because there are other problems to get through. I mean, just to throw this out there, as we saw, remember, in OB3, we used the current law baseline as a way to deal with the fact that it would otherwise have added to the deficit. That's still a problem for them, right? Even if they wanted to do it, would it be revenue neutral? Would it be revenue negative? These are things that they would have to negotiate, and that's not going to be easy, is it?
No, I mean, certainly they have all the same challenges that they had when they were doing OB3. Again, I'd have to look because the numbers literally seem to be changing daily, but I suspect the margins in the House are as tight, probably tighter than they were when OB3 passed. Remember, that was early in the Trump administration. Question is, would Republicans on Capitol Hill be as in lockstep with what the administration is asking as they were that early in the administration? Just an open question. So there are certainly challenges.
Imagine a world where Republicans say, sure, we'll vote for a reconciliation bill, but it must be revenue neutral. Well, that makes it really hard because that means there have got to be offsets likely somewhere. And we all know how hard offsets are.
There were a few things that really divided the intra-Republican negotiations that had fissures within the Republicans. I usually point to some degree, alternative energy issues from a tax perspective, SALT issue, obviously, the state and local tax deduction was a big issue in the House from some of those members from higher tax states. And the third issue is the deficit. There were a lot of members, particularly in the House, but also to some degree in the Senate, who were not comfortable with a deficit number any higher than where they ended up in OB3. And so adding more to the deficit, I would think, would be politically challenging. And as you pointed out, finding offsets is always challenging, to put it mildly.
So maybe that's comforting for some of you listeners that, well, too hard to do a tax bill, so let's just stick with what we got. But that does raise the risk that if they do one and they want it to be revenue neutral, that some of those tax increases that we kind of dodged in OB3 could be back in the conversation. So Tom, let's bring it back to you then. Let's just say theoretically, Republicans have decided they want to pursue a reconciliation bill. That doesn't guarantee there will be tax in there, right? But if we did have tax associated with a reconciliation bill, what are some of the things that we think we ought to be tracking as being in that conversation?
Well, the interesting thing is that there are a lot of bipartisan proposals that are floating around. There are the regular dozen or so tax extenders, things like the so-called NASCAR depreciation schedule for racetracks, depreciation for racehorses, expensing for film and TV, the work opportunity tax credit, which is significant for a number of taxpayers. There are a number of things like that around that have bipartisan support that could easily be put into a reconciliation bill, or even theoretically outside of a reconciliation bill. Although that has its own problems because it sort of opens the barn door to all sorts of other proposals. There are also non-extender items that there's interest in. There are members, particularly from Nevada, who would like to get rid of the limit on the gambling loss deduction. Taiwan is out there, the double taxation relief legislation, all have bipartisan support. I mentioned crypto before. Crypto taxation is an issue and probably follows the regulatory or maybe moves along with it. So there are a number of things that they might want to try to do either in reconciliation or even potentially outside of reconciliation.
If you go talk to Republicans on the Hill and you say, what are you going to do in the next tax bill? Sometimes you get this look back like, well, we just did it. Right? It's always something else. So any specific tax cuts or relief that they're thinking? I mean, I guess you could always say, well, OB3 fixes, right? No bill's perfect. And are there some things they would like to go back and modify, change that could provide additional relief? Are there any, you know, just thinking along those lines?
There's always something. OB3 took the big stuff off the table, all the compelling stuff, all the expirations of the tax cuts that were in the 2017 legislation. They've always got a new pension bill. There are always ideas for pension incentives that are out there that they might want to try to do. There was a little bit of talk in connection with OB3 about increasing the home sale gain exclusion, which hasn't been raised since it was initially capped way back when. There are always things like that around that they might want to try to do. That can be a problem as well, because sorting all that out is not easy, and different members have different priorities, and they all have a cost. And getting back to Jennifer's point about thin margins and a lot of concern among deficit hawks, particularly among House Republicans, trying to add more to the deficit with tax cuts that may be somewhat popular, even on a bipartisan basis, but don't have deep support, can be a problem.
If there was a vehicle moving, people on the Hill would find tax cuts that they could fall in love with, or lobbyists could convince them that they could fall in love with. I mean, even looking at modifying the gambling loss proposal or provision that was enacted in OB3 or other things that were close but not finally in OB3, they will emerge. But I think the point you're making, Tom, is are they compelling enough to really do? That's hard to answer. Jennifer, anything else that you're thinking of that Republicans might want to look at in another reconciliation bill this year?
The major thing on my mind is just health care. Obviously, healthcare is a major focus. The Democrats did a good job of raising the profile of that with the government shutdown. So I think there is a lot of pressure on Republicans to try to come up with something on healthcare. And one thing I do think that there's a lot of support among Republicans for is HSAs, which of course would be a tax-related provision. I know there are many others as well. The question is, can Republicans come together on a partisan, or can there be any type of bipartisan deal on healthcare, probably related to extension of the premium tax credits, which of course is a tax issue. So I guess that's one thing I have in the back of my mind is, can the Hill get anywhere on healthcare, whether that be some type of Republican bill or some type of bipartisan agreement? And I do think that would have some level of tax component.
I agree. The Democrats, as you said, did a good job of making that front and center and sort of pushing reluctant Republicans to feel like they have to do something, whatever that is, something. Well, let's just talk about pay-fors for a second. So I mentioned that we dodged a bunch of pay-fors in OB3. I'll just rattle off a couple that you will all remember. There was the sea salt, right? The limitation on C corporation state local tax deduction. There was the stock buyback excise tax. There were limitations on executive comp. There was the dreaded Section 899 retaliatory tax alongside Pillar 2. If this is going to be fully or partially paid for, start with you, Tom. How likely is it we're going to hear about those things again?
Well, if you want to kill any future tax legislation this year, I mean, one way is to introduce one of those revenue raising provisions. The easiest thing to do to stop legislation is to have something for people to oppose. Much easier to stop things than push things through. And any of those significant revenue raisers is going to create a major obstacle to trying to do a bill. And there's going to be pressure to do it if they introduce a bill that has a significant revenue cost. In the past, at least with extenders, they typically didn't pay for them. They didn't have revenue offsets, but they had compelling things, the things that they really had to do. And it's been the position of tax writing committee chairs on both sides that you don't have to pay for extenders. So those kind of simple things, if you could sort out all the other problems, can do it without any significant revenue raisers. But if you're going to do anything else, raising revenue can be an issue. And maybe there's something to be raised in the crypto area. They may be raising some money there, but there's probably going to be an inclination to try to keep that separate, attached to the crypto regulatory bill, and not open other tax things up to that, which might kill the whole deal. Revenue raising provisions, there's going to be that issue. If they get serious and they need them, then that may cause the whole house of cards to collapse.
I mean, there was a reason why those items were not in the final bill. I do somewhat look at the retaliatory tax, Section 899, as somewhat of a different animal, and that I think that was a razor that a lot of Republicans actually liked. Now, obviously, what's happened with the G7 and the OECD and the recently released side-by-side obviously has a major impact on the viability of 899 and the desirability of 899, but I do somewhat put it in a different bucket, and that usually a lot of razors are things that are done reluctantly by Republicans on Capitol Hill. I'm not sure that's the case, depending on the other outside forces with regard to the OECD, et cetera. I'm not sure that's the case with 899.
I totally agree with you. I don't think we should completely write 899 off yet, because even with the side-by-side deal that the administration seems to support, and we saw statements from Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee Smith, Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee Crapo, seemed to say, yep, good job. However, I still have to get enacted. And you could see Republicans saying, let's move forward with 899 anyway, and to our trading partners saying something like, well, you're clearly committed to enacting the side-by-side deal, which will take 899 off the table. So you should not object to us enacting this. It'd be interesting to see what the reaction was. We've debated at length whether or not it would actually raise any money at this point. I think it's right. It's like we should continue to keep an eye on whether or not 899 has legs in, not that it would drive a tax bill, but that it could find its way into a bill. Is that what you're thinking, Jennifer?
At this point, yes. I'll be honest. I think you and I disagreed on this. I did think earlier that 899 could potentially be a driver. I think given what's happened in the interim, I think that's extremely unlikely, but who knows?
And I would also add to that, that I think there's more enthusiasm among Republican members on the Hill than there is maybe in the administration, which is one of the reasons it came out the last time. I'm not sure that the Treasury Secretary is a big fan of 899 for economic reasons, because of the potential effect on inbound investment. They might prefer to go the tariff route rather than 899. You know, that's another obstacle to 899 legislation.
Fair enough, but you could see the Hill saying, you did such a wonderful job developing this side-by-side deal. You shouldn't object to it. If it's completely bulletproof the way you seem to think it is, then you shouldn't mind us enacting 899. But I agree with you fundamentally, Tom. The administration is not going to love the idea. At least we don't think that they will. So, yeah. And it's worth watching, although the risk of it happening and being impactful is lessened in a post-side-by-side world. Okay. Well, before we wrap, I don't want to rule out the possibility of any kind of bipartisan deal. We've hinted around it a little bit. So I don't know, Tom, maybe to you first. Could we get a bipartisan tax bill, keeping in mind that there's a midterm election 10 months away?
Yeah, the election sort of cuts both ways, because there are things in there that might be popular that members might want to get in. Certainly things like the Work Opportunity Tax Credit are popular with a lot of businesses that members might want to be able to show their constituents. So that sort of cuts both ways. But the problem is we're probably ending where we started, is that there's not a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. These are not must-do things. They're kind of nice things to do. It may have bipartisan appeal, but they're going to run into the problem of other things that members may think are more important, and they're going to have to try to sort those out and deal with the revenue cost. And when you put all that together, it makes it difficult. So it's certainly possible there's bipartisan support for things like the Work Opportunity Tax Credit and, you know, the NASCAR deal. There's no opposition to it, really, from a policy standpoint. It's probably the right policy. Same for racehorses, much as people make fun of them. And film expensing just follows expensing that we're doing for everything else. So it's a possibility, a lot of obstacles in the way.
You agree with that, Jennifer?
Well, as a Kentuckian, I do not make fun of the racehorse depreciation provision. Something also that we maybe hadn't focused on, or at least haven't highlighted, is that it's possible there could be something completely outside of the tax realm, whether that be healthcare or an unknown, that could be the driver behind a reconciliation bill that's not tax-driven, as OB3 was tax-driven. It's possible we could see something like that in the energy space. Who knows what that might be? Once a reconciliation bill is moving, then obviously, more likely than not, there would be some tax components to that. You know, we've been focused on a tax-driven reconciliation bill. It's possible there'd be a reconciliation bill driven by something else that could have a tax component.
Well, that's super helpful. I mean, we often say in a midterm election year, the window for doing big, meaningful stuff is small, but it's not non-existent. All right, so there will be things to talk about this year on the legislative front, and certainly on the regulatory and the global front, but even on the legislative front, we will be watching. So that's a great way to start the year. So thank you very much, Tom. Thank you very much, Jennifer. In closing today, if you're asking yourself, well, what kind of tax bill exactly would Congress pass? They just did a massive tax bill in 2025. Well, you're asking a good question. OB3 scratched a lot of itches, itches that went all the way back to 2017 and in some ways even further. But let's frame this question a little bit differently. Instead of asking the question, what tax provisions could motivate Congress to pass a tax bill, flip the question around. Ask this. If there is a bill moving, what tax provisions might find their way into that legislation? And I think you really do get different answers when you ask the question that way. And I think that second framing is really the more realistic one for 2026. Since Republicans have an opportunity to do a budget reconciliation bill, one that they can move with Republican-only votes, it's reasonable to assume that they will at least try because, well, why not? And if that's true, well, now you have a vehicle for all sorts of tax wants to try and attach to. Washington is full of good tax lobbyists, folks who spend all day looking for any opportunity to get their one issue into law. So if a reconciliation bill begins to coalesce, yeah, that's really all they will need to hear to go to work on getting their idea into that bill. Now, this is no guarantee a reconciliation bill will happen. There will be resistance to that. And the process of doing reconciliation, it's arduous. There are many, many steps that Congress has to get through. And even if that does happen, there's no guarantee it will have a tax title. Or even if there is a tax title, there's no guarantee it will be a meaningful one. It could just be random cats and dogs. But I'm only saying that if our imagination cannot, at the moment, conjure up a list of tax proposals ripe for enactment, well, fear not. Tax ideas will no doubt come out of the woodwork if and when that time comes. Our friends on K Street, well, they'll make sure of that. With that, thanks again for tuning in to Catching Up on Capitol Hill. We'll be back with another episode before long, but until then, I hope to see you soon.